Many mothers in the Philadelphia area struggle to feed, clothe, and house their children every day. Wayne Hall is Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission's Women's Transitional Home. The program at Wayne Hall teaches women how to restructure their lives according to the Word of God. With your help, Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission will keep families together by showing mothers how to have a better life. You can help these struggling mothers by donating to Sunday Breakfast. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission gives women a chance to have a better life. Please help Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission shelter homeless women in Philadelphia today. To make your gift or learn more, visit SundayBreakfast.org or text the word THANKS to 41444. That's text THANKS to 41444. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission, a mother's chance for a new future today.
Your furry family members matter too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets, so come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
And then we're graduated from Thomas Jefferson University.
Right.
And you meet with doctors frequently, and you have written this book called The Freedom Plan.
Correct.
So maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit for us.
All right. Actually, my major in college was sociology, and I've had a lifelong interest in economics and sociology, despite the fact that I'm an orthopedic surgeon and a physician.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was... I decided to do something about, really I started this as kind of a research project. I didn't start out thinking that I was going to write a book, but I just knew that, well, there's right and there's wrong. And I knew that it was wrong for working people or businesses to have to pay one penny more for health care than would be set by direct payment between the patient and the doctor because of an intervention by a third party.
Yes.
And yet I saw it all the time. I also knew it was wrong for Congress to pass a law they hadn't read.
Yes.
A law that the president had to lie about to get passed. I don't know what could be more wrong than that. I knew from my experience that all prior attempts to control health care costs in particular have resulted in higher costs and or a loss of health care freedom. And that's wrong, too. It was wrong to treat, as a doctor, I can tell you that it is wrong to treat the symptoms of a disease, in this case, a sick healthcare system, but to not try to eliminate the cause of the sickness, that is the wrong way to deal with it.
Indeed.
And I actually give some examples in the book in my own experience as a physician, in particular, a fellow who came into the emergency room. I was doing emergency room work at the time. Sort of making extra money during my residency, and he came in because his daughter had been in an auto accident, and she was a beautiful young lady, 17 years old, and she came in with her family, had this horrible laceration on her cheek from her eye all the way down to her lip, and it was all the way, almost all the way through. So we knew she had a permanent disfigurement. And really a stunningly pretty girl, so it was exceptionally tragic, although it would be tragic for anybody. Her father, who came in afterwards, he had been drinking a little, and he was rather obnoxious initially, but then he all of a sudden he had a headache. And one of the nurses says, look, we can have Dr. Perry, we can have him lie down in the back room there, and I'll give him a couple of Tylenol or whatever, and hopefully, we just thought it was stress. And then she comes running in and tells me he's having a seizure. Turns out the guy had an intracerebral bleed and died. But I had never really examined him because he was not a patient. He was just, had a headache. And that stuck with me for years and years and years. Under the circumstances, who would have thought that a guy that comes in a stressful situation with a headache ends up dying? So that was a problem for me, and so I've committed my life to be very thorough in my analysis and diagnoses. So if you try to treat the symptoms of a disease, but you do not eliminate the cause, things just get worse, and that's exactly what the government has done. It's wrong to fine people for not purchasing a product, in this case, health insurance. When out-of-pocket expenses go up, like health insurance deductibles and copays, because of a law, with no means provided for paying that deductible, that's wrong, too. In fact, I think it's borders on tyrannical. For the government to make some people who work hard and live paycheck to paycheck and try to take care of their families pay more for their health care so that others, a voting bloc, can get theirs cheaper, that's just wrong. And voluntary living is fine, but arm twisting by the government to make people do this is wrong. So those were some of the motivations that I had to write the Freedom Plan, An American Answer to Healthcare Reform.
That's wonderful. I commend you on that. I really appreciate what you are doing. And what strikes me is that someone as busy as you obviously are, a doctor is very, very busy, would take the time to do this. These are the times we live in, the extraordinary times when people are called upon to do extraordinary things. You probably don't want to be spending your time doing all of that, but you are, and we thank you for it. And I want to welcome Carla. She's here now.
Good morning, Dr. John Perry. I made it in safely, and I was listening to you on the ride in.
Well, I'm glad you're safe.
Thank you. So let's talk a little bit more about state reform. What can we do right here? I know that your book addresses this, about tort, confirming the right of health providers to enter into contracts with patients that provide alternative dispute resolution. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Most people don't understand that the states are just as involved with high health care costs as the federal government, and that really there should be both state and federal government reform. The federal government, although it always tries to encroach on what the states do, has its own area, and the states have their area too. Tort reform, when it comes to the healthcare system, should be a province of the states, because almost all litigation involving healthcare involves state courts and the state system. So when you hear the federal government wants to pass health tort reform, that would apply to federal issues and federal jurisdictions, but not to the states. And there are several things that the states can do. One of them is tort reform. There's insurance regulation and reciprocity. There's licensing reform, workers' compensation, and Medicaid reform. These are all things that would be necessary for the state. But when it comes to tort reform, nobody knows how much the malpractice thing, the threat of tort actually costs the healthcare system. We know it's significant, but we don't know how much. So, in the book, I go into the background, how we got the system we got, which is what's called a contingency fee, where the lawyer takes a case based on the ability to recover. It doesn't cost you anything to start an action. So anybody can sue anybody with no downside risk. Okay, the lawyer's mm-hmm. only risk is his time.
Right.
So,
which he gets paid handsomely for if he wins, or even if he loses, correct? Because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, but in England, lawyers, first of all, are capitated. They're not allowed to just take 50, 60, 70, 80% of the winnings, correct?
Yeah, they're different. It's different in England. We have a system that's entirely contingent, and there's fees involved and so on.
Right. I'm saying that I think I like England's better. And also, don't the people who are, if the lawyer loses, he does not get anything.
Right. The key to tort reform is what's called loser pays, which means that if somebody initiates an action, and this is the system they have not only in England but in other countries as well, our current system really came out of the American West, and it was actually considered in England to be immoral, because what happens is that the lawyer takes a cut of what should, all of which should be going to the plaintiff. You know, if you win a suit and you get an award, that award should all go to you because you were the one who was harmed. And the lawyer takes a percentage of that. And in England, that was done at one point and then outlawed because rich people would take on poor people's causes, and they would pay a little bit for the legal fees and then take a big cut of whatever the person got, and the rich people just got richer, and it was deemed to be immoral. So anyway, the loser pays. The biggest obstacle to that is, and the lawyers always throw this up, is, well, what do you do if somebody loses? They initiate an action. Now, who's going to pay the court costs? How are you going to get a poor person to do that? Well, this has already been thought out. And in other countries, in particular England, they have a system called court cost insurance. Now, if you get automobile insurance or something like that in England, you pay for this court cost insurance, which means that you, if your case is accepted for insurance purposes, that if you lose the case, your insurance covers court costs. In our country, we could do something like that as well, where an individual, either the plaintiff's attorney or the claimant's attorney or the defense would have the ability to go to an insurance company, submit the facts of the case in summary, and then the insurance company, this is not a government agency now, this is private, they can look at the facts and determine what rate they would require to be paid for court cost insurance, or if they even want to give court cost insurance. If you have somebody, for instance, who has a really weak case, they may not be able to get court cost insurance, and that's going to tell that person and that lawyer they got a crummy case, and should probably drop it.
That's right.
So that's one aspect. Now, you had mentioned the second thing. I don't know, how much time do we have?
We have more time. I love this conversation, and people need to be aware of this.
Okay. Well, so I think that would be an ideal system. Now, the other thing, and this is something that I personally was involved with a number of years ago, is we need to be able to have contracts between and among ourselves, okay? And one of the contracts that we could have as a physician and a patient.
Dr. Perry, so you're saying contracts among ourselves, you mean healthcare professionals and patients?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry, healthcare professionals. We have contracts already with insurance companies. That's a whole separate issue. But this has to do with the payment for services. And I'm, my goal here is to have a direct pay model, that is a market model where patients pay doctors, and the Freedom Plan gives them the ability to do that by giving tax credits and so on. But this would be even more important. But you have patients and doctors enter into an agreement to settle a case by alternative dispute resolution. And we're talking here about something like arbitration, something like mediation. Now, mediation means direct negotiations. I had a contract that I had patients sign that said that before they would initiate an action, if there's any dispute at all, I'm not whether it was a financial dispute on my part or their part, or whether it was a malpractice dispute or whatever it was, okay, that we would come to each other first and say, look, I got a problem with you. Let's work this, see if we can work this out, and try to resolve it at that level.
Yes.
If that didn't work, and if this sounds familiar, it's in the Bible. If that didn't work, then we would go to mediation, which means that you would have a third party that when you'd sit down together and you would try to come to an amicable resolution by discussing it out.
Right. That is biblical, and that is correct.
That is Matthew 18, chapter 18. The third thing would be analogous to the third stage in Matthew 18, which you bring the issue before the church. Okay. Well, in this case, it's not going to be the church, but you would have then arbitration. What the contract said was that if we got to that point, that the patient and the doctor would each choose an orthopedic surgeon in this case, because I'm an orthopedic surgeon, somebody who's an expert. And then those two people in the arbitration panel would choose a third. And then the case would be heard. And what the decision was of the three orthopedic surgeons, one of whom was selected again by the patient, one of whom by the physician, and the third one between the two. And presumably the one who was, their decision would be binding on both. And then there also was a provision to pay court costs for the loser. So they had loser pay provision in it as well. So needless to say, there came a time when, you don't do this when somebody's coming into the emergency room with their femur hanging out. You know, you do this, you know, in controlled situation.
Right.
But there was a time in my office where a woman came in for treatment. And when she got that agreement, she just flipped out. And she said, "You can't do this. This is illegal. You cannot do this. This is horrible." And turns out, she says, "I work for," and she gave the name of a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
"And I'm going to bring this to him."
Mm-hmm.
So she did.
Mm-hmm.
She brought him. Needless to say, sometime, I guess about a year later, something like that, I get hit with a malpractice suit on an ankle injury, and it was that lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the case was totally bogus, but because you can initiate an action without any problem, it was done. So then we hashed out this agreement first, and this agreement went to the Superior Court. In Pennsylvania,
yes.
And the judge said that it was unconscionable. So, and the interesting thing is, the agreement had in it, you know, provisions that said if one provision is found to be unacceptable, the other provisions remain intact. Well, he just threw that out too, and basically said, you know, we're not going to do this because this was an absolute complete threat to the tort system as it is. And I just didn't have the money or
right.
the time
right.
to pursue it.
Dr. Perry, you bring up such a valid point, because I happen to have quite a few doctors in my family. And in particular, my brother's an ER doctor in the Philadelphia area. And the Philadelphia area is ridiculously litigious because there's way too many law schools there, and they all tend to congregate and continue to live in Philadelphia. But lawyers should not be allowed to walk into the ER and just follow doctors around. They are impeding health care and a doctor's ability to treat patients well, because that is indeed what happens. I mean, we have a word for them, right? They're called ambulance chasers. They should not be allowed into the hospitals. And can you also speak a little bit to when doctors are sued for these frivolous lawsuits? Like, for example, you might have someone that's completely drunk and decides to drive on his motorcycle, because this is something that happened, and crashes and almost kills himself and someone else. But after the doctor saves his life, this gentleman has a scar left on his hand. But if it were me, I would just be thankful that I was still alive. And this person sues the doctor because there's a scar left on their hand. Now, this was obviously thrown out. However, do you know, when doctors have to go and do their depositions or go to court, do you get paid for that?
No.
That's right. So basically, it would be like if you have a contractor that can't go to work for 2 weeks because he's being sued, he doesn't have any income coming in because he's not able to build houses. And on top of it, he has to pay law fees. And at the end of it, it's all frivolous. And I know that you, what really impresses me about you is that you went into medicine to help and heal people.
Sure. I think most of us do that.
That is correct. Most doctors go into this profession to help and heal people. And now I believe that we find a lot of doctors who are spending way too much time fighting this battle that you're talking about. Obamacare, the frivolous lawsuits, and it almost reminds me of, you know, in the Bible, Nehemiah and the Israelites rebuilding the wall and having to both build and fight at the same time. You have to continue to heal your patients, but you're fighting at the same time for reform. So how can we help you besides purchasing your book, The Freedom Plan, An American Answer to Healthcare Reform? which has a lot of wonderful ideas in it. How else can we help you as patients, as parents, as families? How can we help our docs?
How can you help our docs? Well, first off,
How can we come alongside and support you?
I know I'm trying to put this in the proper words because it may sound self-serving, but just saying, you know, that you appreciate what's being done, that you are thankful for our efforts. That means a lot to us. It's not just, you know, sure you're going to get a bill. Sure your insurance company gets a bill. People aren't expected to work for nothing.
Well, I don't think that my piano teacher expects to work for my children for nothing. I pay my piano teacher. I pay my children's tutors. It's interesting that there is absolutely a current in this country that they think that a doctor who performs surgery for 2, 3, 5 hours shouldn't get paid anything. Yet these same people will go and have $1,000 season tickets to, I don't know, the Phillies or the Eagles.
Right.
So it's almost like a perspective or priority, what's important.
Well, it's a matter of civility.
And hey, that's another book for you to write.
Our culture has lost a lot of its civility and has been degraded in many respects. But, you know, we need to honor one another. I think that's probably the bottom line here. Doctors need to honor patients, and patients need to honor doctors. I think most doctors are very professional in their approach, and that's part of the whole thing that Peter talks about in honoring all men. Even the most the person who's the least attractive, you know, our job is to give them our very best, 100%. On everything. And when we do surgery, we do treatment, we are attentive. We care very, very much about getting the best possible result for that patient. We're always thinking, you know, boy, I just hope this person does well. And a lot of times, you know, then somebody turns around and sues you, you don't feel real good. So maybe a little,
it's very disheartening.
A thank you card or just a word or two is great.
And I think it's even helpful for all of our patients to realize that, you know, this isn't McDonald's when they go to the doctor. They may have to wait 15 or 30 minutes, but it's not because the doctor is having their nails done. It's because the doctor might be sitting and sharing with someone that they have a terminal illness that they weren't aware of, or perhaps it's a doctor that's saying that we need to amputate. But it is certainly not that the doctor is, you know, Facebooking. I know that many of you don't even have time to eat breakfast or lunch or dinner because you are vigorously seeing as many patients as you're able to see. And can you talk a little bit about if we move to Obamacare? Well, we have on some levels, though I still hope that socialized medicine gets out of our state, that they are not going to, they think that people think that they wait long in a waiting room now, they're going to be waiting days to see a doctor. Am I right about that? Because that's what happens in England. That's what happens in California, where they have the Kaiser system, I believe. If you break something on Friday, don't think you're going to see a doctor on Saturday. You will have it fixed on Monday morning.
Yeah, really, the best system is the one that is the most efficient. And if you look at Obamacare, or actually our system generally, but in specifically Obamacare, if you look in the book, there is, and I don't know if you saw that, Carla, or not, there's a schematic of Obamacare and how bureaucratic it is. That is another layer of bureaucracy. If you think of medicine today, okay, in the center is the patient or the doctor. And look, are you familiar with the Venn diagram? Remember that from high school?
Yes, I do, actually.
Okay. Well, if you had two intersecting circles, okay, one would be the insurance, and one would be I forget what the other one is now. Oh, the hospital, let's say, okay, which put regulations on people and so forth. One would be the business, okay, and they would all be intersecting, for instance, your business insurance. The health insurance you get from working, that can change from year to year, and that changes everything as to how you achieve health care. But over and around all of those is the government. And the more, and the government drives all of those. It drives the hospitals with regulations, and it drives businesses with regulations, and it drives insurance companies with regulations. So although they are surviving in this environment and doing reasonably well, that's only temporary. And the main problem is that the government regulates all of us. The government is a big circle around all of them, and it's applying force. And that really is the problem. And the more a bureaucracy grows, the more inefficient it becomes, the more you end up with arbitrary rules. Bureaucracies have been studied sociologically by over the last couple of centuries, and they have, and it's been shown that the bigger a bureaucracy gets, the more impersonal it gets, the more arbitrary it gets. They make rules. This is the way it is. More important than delays, even, are the denials. There will come a time when if you're 75 or 76 years old, they may say to you, and you have diabetes, they may say to you, you can't get your total knee replacement.
Of course, because that's what's happening now in England, right, in Canada?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the denial of care is absolutely inexcusable. I mean, how do you justify that? Well, you justify that because, well, we have to, because that's the only way we can afford this with the taxes that we are levying on you all.
Right.
Here's the key. There's something called Occam's Razor. And Occam's Razor means that if you philosophically, it means that if you have two arguments and one has less assumptions than the other, the one with the fewer assumptions tends to be the correct one. Well, in philosophy, that doesn't always hold, and it can be criticized, but in economics, it definitely holds, because the most efficient system is the direct pay system between the doctor and the patient, or the doctor and the hospital, or the doctor or the patient. I'm sorry, the patient and the hospital, or the patient and the doctor, or the patient and the physical therapist or whoever. That is the most direct. We have to go through such rigmarole to bill for every little thing. That the inefficiency in the system creates all these problems, and it creates the high costs as well. I want to give one more thing, just so that people understand. This is not just, we tend to think about healthcare in isolation. In 1950s, healthcare was 4.5% of gross national product. Today, it is 17%. Is that because we're sicker than ever? Are we five times or four times sicker than we were then? No, of course not. The reason is the bureaucracies. If we said today, because of increasing age, that perhaps healthcare should be 7% of GDP, okay, that still leaves 10% of our gross domestic product. That is our entire economy. 10% is pure waste just in the healthcare system. Now, if you had a business and you had 10% in just one aspect that was total waste, how can you efficiently provide the services? And that's what we're dealing with. You wonder why people have difficulty with getting good jobs, why we don't have high-paying jobs and a vibrant economy. Well, one of the reasons is the government has become almost 40% of our gross domestic product. I'm off on a tangent here, but you get the point that healthcare is not in isolation. If we can reform healthcare, there'll be benefits far beyond healthcare, benefits generally for all of us. A more vibrant economy, that means more jobs and higher wages and a happier populace generally.
So, Dr. Perry, you're brilliant. I can hear this in everything that you're saying. What do you see for our future? I hear you saying local control. And by that, I mean just doctor and patient relationship, mom and pop. I have the idea of going back to Little House on the Prairie, where the doctor, knew all of his patients and his clients and his family so well for generations. And, they loved him and they knew that he was doing the best in their interest and vice versa. So, of course, we can't get paid with eggs and chickens anymore. I do understand that. But what do you see for the future, ideally?
We can get paid with that.
I know. It actually would be better and probably faster, because I know a lot of you guys do surgery today and you get paid a whole year from now.
Yeah. I'm sort of partial to cookies. But
chocolate chip.
Yeah, right. So anyway, as far as the future goes,
yes.
well...
Let's talk about the hope of the future, what we would like to move towards.
We're on two paths. If we keep going the way we're going, we're going to run into all kinds of problems. Medicare is going to go bankrupt unless they cut back dramatically. When they cut back dramatically, there's going to be doctor shortage because doctors aren't going to take it. That's going to create problems for hospitals because hospitals are hiring doctors and so forth and so on. And we really cannot afford not to make changes. That has to be understood. You know, people want to repeal Obamacare, fine, but you must change the system. Even without Obamacare, you must change the system, or we're going to end up in a disastrous situation. Now, the Freedom Plan specifically outlines a method of addressing each government intervention at the federal and state level, the major ones, and reverses each one, and does so by setting up a marketplace for people. Now, for instance, at the federal level, it calls for a $2,000 per year tax credit, meaning that if your income tax and or Social Security tax, you have the option of taking up to $2,000 right off your tax bill now, not a deduction. This is the taxes you're going to spend, and put it in your retirement account, which can be then withdrawn if you need it for health care expenses. And each year, it adds on. Every year you remain healthy, you add on, and you get a higher what's called deductible on your policy. So more and more you are obligated to pay from this money for your health care, but you do it directly with the physician, directly with the hospital. And eventually I anticipate many people, most people who are generally healthy throughout their entire lives, will have $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 deductible policies. But the beauty of it is that all that time, that money is earning income tax-free. It's gaining tax-free in your account, and you're only obligated for the amount you took as a tax credit each year. So you actually, that helps with your retirement as well. So that's the kind of thing that can start the ball rolling. We also need to get healthcare out of the businesses. If we can get phase out the deduction of businesses for healthcare insurance, they no longer have to pay that. And there is a method in the Freedom Plan for individuals to be able to afford their own health insurance itself, and in addition to this free market aspect. And then our businesses become more competitive with the rest of the world. We have an advantage over a number of countries in a lot of ways, but we put all these burdens on our businesses, and that makes us less competitive, and we lose jobs. If you look at the two times in our history when we were had the most vibrant economies, the first was in the 1920s, and the second was in the 1950s. Both were after world wars, because we had the 800-pound gorilla economy, and we just outcompeted everybody. We had all the infrastructure necessary. We don't have that anymore, but we can put ourselves at a competitive edge by getting businesses freed up from this obligation, getting health care costs down, and having this be an efficient system, and it would produce tremendous prosperity in the country, in my opinion. If you read the book, I think you'll understand it. The Freedom Plan outlines all this and gives a vision for the future, what it would be like under the Freedom Plan. This is a legislative strategy. It is not something that's going to happen overnight, but you need to work toward it. What can people do? They can learn this stuff so they don't have the wool pulled over their eyes by the politicians and whatever. Politicians just treat symptoms. If they get pressure, that's what they treat. You know, so they come up with legislation to just basically take the heat off, satisfy their constituents, and get reelected. That's basically what politics is about in America. And somehow we muddle through and we survive. But this is a scientific endeavor, and if you understand it and can promote it among your friends, among your representatives, get a relationship with your representatives, with your senators, with your congressmen, your local whatever, with other people who are like-minded, and be an activist. I mean, we're Americans. We got to participate in the system.
It's in our blood, I think. And Dr. Perry, I think that you might agree that the reason that we need to have relationships with our representatives is because they have thousands and thousands of bills and documentation and paperwork that they cannot look through it all.
Right.
And that's why we need to come in and say, this is specifically what we are seeing. This is what's happening. I mean, they have a lot of aides that tell them what everything says, right?
Yes.
So yes. You're correct. We need to come in and say, this is what we are reading, or I work in this profession and this is what I'm seeing. I heard you say that for those of us who are working, we can have this savings plan for our health care. But what do you think about the no income? Because presently, I believe we have the largest no income in our country. How would they get health care?
Well, we have to eventually reform Medicaid, but you know, right now our situation is that healthcare is so expensive that we have the no income people are the people who are either I guess they're people who are not working and not reporting income. That's what you're talking about?
Yes, that is what they might be working under the table, they're getting money under the table, or they're just not working at all. They're getting welfare.
Well,
and I also want to share with you that I went to Thomas Jefferson University for my master's degree as an occupational therapist, and I worked there for quite a few years, Dr. Perry. And it always makes me giggle when people say that we do not provide for low income or no income, because when I was working at Jefferson, I was daily treating people who did not have the ability to pay for their hospital bills. We never turned anyone away. The hospital ate that cost. And it's also interesting to me that a lot of young people who were like 18, 20, 22, maybe multiple gunshot wounds, multiple stab wounds. We used to call them frequent flyers because they might come in at 18 with a gunshot wound and then again at 19 and then again at 21. But anyway, the point is this. We would always encourage them. You have to sign up for medical assistance. You have to sign. And they would not. You can bring a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Right, Dr. Perry?
That's true. But you know what? You mentioned two people, the ones that are under the, earning money under the...
I'm still here.
Okay. The ones who are doing that would be enticed by the Freedom Plan. They would be enticed to come out because there would be no incentive for them not to do this. But the ones who just simply don't want to work or whatever or can't work,
right?
Those kind of individuals, there are a couple of plans already out there. One in New Jersey where the state would pay doctors malpractice insurance if they provide 4 hours a week of charity care. It would save Medicaid billions of dollars in that state alone. This is legislation they're not considering. The main thing is that doctors in the market system always used to give free care. They anticipated 10%
sure.
of what they would do was going to be free, and they lived with that. If we get back to a market-based system instead of everything being through insurance, doctors have no problems doing that.
That's right. And a lot of our Catholic and Christian hospitals, which many of them, you know, St. Agnes and Methodist Hospital, they all knew that treating people that needed had health needs, I agree with you. They knew that they were not going to get paid for many of them. And they understood that and they did that happily. Anyway, we are out of time, Dr. Perry. I encourage everyone to purchase The Freedom Plan, An American Answer to Healthcare Reform, which is on Amazon. And again, this is Carla Tedeschi with Dr. Perry. He holds a sociology degree from Dartmouth College, earned his MD degree right here in Philly from Thomas Jefferson University. And he is an orthopedic surgeon practicing in Berks County, but also Florida. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
God bless. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We have with us... We are talking about Living Proof Live with Beth Moore in Atlantic City, New Jersey, March 13th and 14th. We encourage all of you moms, grandmoms, aunts, uncles, and I know that even you're going to have men showing up for this. Can you tell us a little bit about what is happening March 13th and 14th?
Well, Carla, as you know, Beth Moore is one of the all-time great, wonderful Bible studies. She brings stories to us and brings us encouragement. She's encouraging everyone in bringing someone, shepherd another woman to this event that maybe hasn't known the Lord or is new in the Lord or some group or group in need. She is a woman of God, a minister, a humanitarian, and a patriot. I don't know if you're aware of this, Carla, but Beth Moore herself will call herself an Army brat. Her father was a patriot, and he was a major in the Army. So she knows all about what our men and women fight for out there in freedom. And we fought to have freedom in this country, freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. So it's going to be one of the biggest Christian women's event ever on the Jersey Shore. We are so excited about her coming, Carla. And thank you for helping get the word out. It is March 13th and 14th. And on February 13th, we are going to be having a prayer, community prayer night also. So we've just had prayer events throughout this, just surrounding this event. And, you know, it's not just about Beth Moore, although I love this woman and I love her heart for God. It's about bringing our communities and family together because we are here before, during, and after the event. Beth will be here for one day, but what Lifeway does is they give us this program. They give us women this program to bring our churches together, to bring our families together, to strengthen our communities. And that's what's so wonderful about Living Proof Live.
That's right. And here we talk so much about strong families make strong communities and make strong nation, really. So this is a place where moms, dads, children, youth group, kids, girls, because they need to start figuring out their purpose, right?
Oh, yeah.
And who they are.
Yes. One of the biggest supporters on the East Coast is Maurice Pierce. They have an event called A Closer Walk every year. Started out with a couple dozen teens. Now it's thousands of teens that come to the shore that want to hear and know about our God of our nation. And I'm so thankful that you continue to encourage families because we are tomorrow the value that we bring our homes today.
That's right. I love
that.
And I want to encourage people to call in at 877-667-1180 because we are giving four tickets away to this fabulous event in Atlantic City, March 13th and 14th. 877-667-1180. Living Proof with Beth Moore. Tell us where we're able to stay in Atlantic City. Do you have a block of room saved for those of us who are coming from Delaware, Pennsylvania?
Well, we have women that are very creative about staying. You know, we have women that are doing whole retreats around this weekend because there are workshops 2 days before this in Ocean City. So we have women that will be staying as in family homes. We have down on the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, we have all the resorts along there. If you go on Lifeway.com, Living Proof, there's a whole array of places that we've recommended and have worked out special pricing. But like I said, women are creative, and they're going to, they've rented whole houses from everywhere from Ocean City on up north to Atlantic City. So it is going to be quite an event and quite a time. I think about, in fact, Beth's her theme for this event is getting out of the boat based on the book of the chapter in Matthew where it talks about Peter getting out of the boat because Jesus called him. And we're just encouraging women to get to that, look at that place of a calling, a high, how we can step up as women within our communities. And we can be women of God. We've adopted a little slogan in our promotion locally, and that is women as one. We are united. We talk about see the shining sea as thinking about our own borders of east to west as our nation. But you know what? In the book of Zechariah, Carla, we're told he speaks the peace to nations and his dominion is from sea to sea. And that's referring to being a people around the world of God. And our, you know, sometimes our media would cut us short and make us believe that God is not in our country, God is not in our schools. And I can tell you, from bringing these women together through Living Proof Live, God is alive in this country, Carla. I know it's one of your favorite songs.
That's right.
It is so true that there are community schools that are having Bible study after school.
Yes.
Yes, there are community events that are going on. There are women workshops. There are, in fact, I know a lot of women that are having Bible studies on their lunch breaks.
Yes.
In their workplaces.
So I know I get together with mommies from my daughter's school, and we pray for her public school together. And I think that what I love and adore so much about this event is that we need to come together, right? Because we're going to put gas into our tanks when we get together like this. We're going to inspire and encourage and edify one another.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I had a young girl that confided in me through prayer. I just met her through this event, and she was so heartbroken her whole life because she did not know her father. And she found out that her father in college had actually given her mother money to pay for an abortion. And she was heartbroken to think that she had a father that did not want her. And I prayed with her and concluded and confirmed in her mind, she has a father that always loved her. And he will never leave her. And he will never forsake her. And that is the father of all her heart, and that is God. And she came through, and she saw God in a different way. She saw her father in a different way. She realizes that her human father did not even know her. And if he knew her today, he would be so proud of her.
Listen, we have someone that has called in, and they want the 4 tickets. So I think it would be exciting for you to go ahead and tell her that she won the 4 tickets today to Atlantic City.
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful.
And help her to spread the word, okay?
Yes.
Christine, are you on the line?
Hi, I am. Yeah.
I am so excited. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for calling in.
I was emailing you to ask you when you're going to do that, and Deb came on. Because she emailed me yesterday and told me. So
awesome.
We have a few women that aren't able to go because they can't afford the $70 or whatever it is. So
that is wonderful.
I can give the tickets to them.
And you're on
the
air. You're on the air live right now. So that is so encouraging. That's awesome. I feel like God allowed you to win these tickets and listen today.
I do also. Congratulations, Christine, and thank you for your heart for women. You know, it sounds like you have some Bible studies and some things that you're doing already locally. And for you to know these women and have this opportunity is just so wonderful. I'm excited for you. Please let us know after you go to Living Proof Live and let us know how that goes with the women that you're shepherding there.
Oh, thank you, Deb. I appreciate that. And these women will appreciate it, too. These are sponsorships for them, you know, them to go.
Thank you so much.
That'll really be a help for them to go. And I think my cousin's going to be down there. My cousin's wife, actually. So I'm going to catch up with her, too. She lives in Ocean City.
Christine, thank you so much.
Christine, have you ever gone to a Beth Moore event?
No, we haven't. I don't think any ladies in the church have. They're all excited, and we might rent a house in Stone Harbor. We're trying to get that together, too. A friend of mine has a house over there, so there are options. We're trying to pull this together soon. So,
well, we only have 1 minute left, but this has been a very exciting morning.
Yeah, we'll be excited to hear.
Okay, so if you can just leave your address with the producer, and she'll mail them right out to you, Christine.
Okay, we'll do. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you there, Deb. Okay, take care.
So in our last few minutes together, are you able to give us your website so that we can go online and order tickets?
Yes, it's www.lifeway.com/livingproof. And you'll find the information there. And on Facebook, it is Living Proof Live Atlantic City. And we'll get you plugged into all the events and everything's happening up to then. And God bless you, Carla.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
For our women and family. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. This is Carla Dedessi with Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty here in the Philadelphia area. Stream in live from anywhere at any time. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our social networks. God bless. Have an awesome weekend.
You're the king of these people. You're the lord of this nation. You are. You're the light in this darkness.
Many mothers in the Philadelphia area struggle to feed, clothe, and house their children every day. Wayne Hall is Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission's Women's Transitional Home. The program at Wayne Hall teaches women how to restructure their lives according to the Word of God. With your help, Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission will keep families together by showing mothers how to have a better life. You can help these struggling mothers by donating to Sunday Breakfast. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission gives women a chance to have a better life. Please help Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission shelter homeless women in Philadelphia today. To make your gift or learn more, visit SundayBreakfast.org or text the word THANKS to 41444. That's text THANKS to 41444. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission, a mother's chance for a new future today.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets, so come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.